The Louisiana Philharmonic was founded in 1991 out of the ashes of the defunct New Orleans Symphony. Their troubled past was not unique. Several orchestras around the U.S. had folded or gone through strikes or lockouts or were filing for bankruptcy protection. Their troubles were compounded by the collapse of the New Orleans oil industry in the 1980s, but the musicians would not give up. A handful of them gathered around a kitchen table and cooked up a creative solution to the orchestra's woes. Almost a quarter century later, two of the architects of that solution are reflecting on their recovery, not just from the reorganization, but the storm that flooded their concert hall. Next month, the orchestra goes home to the Orpheum Theater for the first time since Hurricane Katrina. The husband and wife team, Jim Atwood and Patty Adams, principal timpani and principal piccolo, spoke to City Lights executive producer Noel Morris about their journey.
Our story, the LPO, the reorganization of what had been the New Orleans Philharmonic, actually begins with the Denver Symphony, which went through the same upheaval 2 years before. It had been the Denver Symphony that had a lot of fractious labor problems. And so anyway, they ended up getting locked out. And long story short, they reorganized as the Colorado Symphony Orchestra. When this happened to us, and I can remember the day it happened to us because we walked into Loyola one September day. This is after the orchestra. Everybody had come back from summer festivals or whatever. We walked into Loyola one morning and a student came up and said, "Oh, I'm so sorry to hear about the symphony." "What?" "It's out of business." That's how we found out. So anyway, in the reorganization, basically we used... I can't say we used Colorado as a model. We were inspired by the fact that the people in Denver were able to do this. And had that not happened, I don't know if we'd have had this bright idea. But that's how it got started, basically. And we were, and the second part of the thing that was crucial was the fact that if the old organization had declared bankruptcy in May at the end of the previous season, then a lot of people probably wouldn't have come back from their summer festivals.
And they would have had a summer to look for a new job.
That's exactly right. And so the thing was, we were all here. We were ready to play, figuratively and literally, we were ready to put on an orchestra season. And the only thing we needed at that point was to create an infrastructure to support the artistic side that already existed and was in place. That part sounds easy, doesn't it?
I'm sure it gets more interesting.
It got exponentially more complicated every week after that. But it was really, actually, as harrowing it was at the time, it was tremendously exciting. Now when I see books about entrepreneurship, read articles about entrepreneurship, everything in those articles and books rings true. It's the things that we went through here to create an infrastructure and an organization.
It's interesting that you would even draw that parallel to entrepreneurship, because I'm sure that as a kid in band and a percussion major, it never occurred to you that you might be an entrepreneur and a person that MBAs would be looking at.
That's safe to say, yes. You know, I said that there were these two things, the Denver Symphony and the fact that we were all here. A third thing was that in considering the possibility of reorganizing, creating this new orchestra, we had half a dozen or a dozen people that were really interested in and had some sort of nascent skills in important areas. We had a trumpet player that was interested in fundraising. We had a clarinet player that was interested in educational outreach. I was interested in the financial side. My extremely talented wife, who besides being a wonderful flutist is also a great artist and at that time was interested in graphic arts, she wanted to take on the marketing part of it. and she won 3 awards for best black and white brochure, because we couldn't afford color at the time. Best black and white piece 3 years in a row.
It was basically an extremely collaborative process. And that's really how we all did what we did, is the collaboration. Now, between musicians, as we say now, it was the most gratifying and terrifying thing we've ever done, because all these people's jobs were on the line. So we were, things were pretty intense. But from the community standpoint, and volunteers in our community for the orchestra, that collaboration was invaluable. We had so many people helping us that were not in the orchestra, and the art agency was the most important one for me, because I had to write the copy and convince the musicians, yes, this is what we're gonna do. And then one of the worst parts, I think, or most challenging parts, was that I had to convince the orchestra's finance director, my husband, that we were gonna spend this amount of money on paper. You're gonna spend what on paper? Or this is how much it's gonna cost to print? Or so that was a very odd symbiotic relationship, I guess, is that I was—
It made some interesting dinner conversations.
There you go. Because I was spending and he was saving, so it was very odd. But Jim essentially taught himself how to do spreadsheets, how to write budgets. He's the one that had to go in with spreadsheets and explain what this new orchestra was about. He's the one that convinced these business leaders to give us money.
As a marketing person, were you thinking, how can we get our people to come back to these concerts? Or were you thinking, we need to add more people to our constituents? We need new audiences.
Quite definitely my first thought was to bring back the people that loved us in the first place, to get them to care about the orchestra again, or to reach out and say, these are the people we supported before, and we trust them to deliver what they say they're going to do.
Well, one of the first things we did to reconnect with our old audience is we sold subscriptions, and we hand-delivered all those subscription tickets in the community.
Wow, you mean you drove to people's houses?
We drove to their houses, knocked on their door, made nice, put the tickets in their hands, and of course, everyone was impressed.
So you had gone through this reorganization. You must have felt like you were getting your footing and getting some traction. And then this little thing called a hurricane came along. I can't imagine what you were feeling.
There actually, after the hurricane, there was, I don't think there was a moment's doubt in anybody's mind that we were just going to find a way to pick up where we left off.
I mean, I guess musicians play. That's what you do.
Sure, that's what it is we do.
That's actually the part we know best. And it's the rest of it that was the education of a lifetime. To reiterate what he's saying is, we had already done this. We had already lost everything and we got it back. So there was no doubt that we would do this again. It was just a matter of figuring out the how this time.
Jim Atwood and Patty Adams of the Louisiana Philharmonic speaking with City Lights executive producer Noel Morris. In a moment, their story continues with the year they spent as evacuees of Hurricane Katrina. You're listening to City Lights on WABE Atlanta. I'm Lois Reitzes.
Tonight, starting at 7 on PBA 30. Grab a cup of tea and sit back for the best of the British crime dramas. The case solving begins at 7 with Inspector Morse and continues at 8 with the very popular Death in Paradise. Next up at 9 is old fan favorite New Tricks. And rounding out the lineup at 10 is new fan favorite Whitechapel. That's a full evening of British mystery and mayhem. And we have it for you starting at 7, exclusively on PBA 30, Atlanta's PBS station.
We heard Jim Atwood and Patty Adams, husband and wife, principal musicians, and senior administrators of the Louisiana Philharmonic.
Were many of the musicians displaced for a lot of time? Were people living in hotel rooms and FEMA trailers, all that?
Yeah, the cross-section of the orchestra pretty much mirrored the cross-section of the city. That is, some people lost their homes, some people were inconvenienced, some people didn't have a problem at all. One of the great things about the orchestra world, we talk about all the time about how an orchestra is like a family, but the orchestral world in the greater orchestral community in the country is very much a family. And so when something like this happens, a strike or some sort of outage, all the other orchestras, when they need an extra flute player, extra horn player, whatever, they remember, oh, you know, so that orchestra's out. Let's call somebody from there. So our orchestra members played in orchestras all over the country for that entire year. I got to play with the Chicago Symphony, which was a wonderful experience, of course. And Chicago was our evacuation city. Also, not only were we playing in symphony orchestras here and there, but Patty and I ended up subbing on Phantom of the Opera.
In Cincinnati, yeah.
Well, you were all over the place.
I played in Colorado Symphony, Fort Wayne Philharmonic. Basically, for the evacuation, if you were pregnant and played piccolo, I was your girl. And that's how I was getting called, is somebody was having a baby, and they would call me.
Where do you stay? Where do you live when you do that?
Well, when you get to sub with a Broadway show on the road, everything is given to you. As far as subbing with an orchestra, we, like for example in Fort Wayne, I stayed with a symphony volunteer. So the symphony put out a call to their volunteer committee and said, we have this evacuee from New Orleans, you know. So there I was, the evacuee. But and in Colorado, I stayed with friends both times.
Were there physical challenges, oboe players getting cane, or I can't imagine, whatever it is that you need to be a musician?
I've got a great story. It doesn't have to do with an instrument. The first concert we gave, actually, the Nashville Symphony hosted us for a fundraiser in Nashville. And this is
for the LPO?
For the LPO. This is maybe a month after the storm. American Airlines agreed to fly in all the musicians from across the country, wherever we were. So it was going to be our first time back together, first time chance to play our first fundraiser. But in the organization part of this, we realized that when everybody left New Orleans, you know, they grabbed the kid and the dog and the fiddle, but they probably didn't grab their black clothes in the back of the closet. So we realized that no one was going to have concert clothes. So the word went out across the orchestra grapevine, if you've got a tails or tux or something in the back of your closet that you've outgrown of, and all orchestral musicians have those clothes that they've outgrown, put them in a bag and mail them to the concert hall in Nashville. And so at our first rehearsal, literally backstage, they'd set up some tables, was covered with tails and concert clothes. And so we picked through and found our size. And we got tails from all over the place, including a big bunch from the Kennedy Center. At that time, the head of the National Opera in the Kennedy Center was Placido Domingo. And as it turns out, Placido Domingo and I are the same size. And to this day, my tails coat says, made for Placido Domingo. And when I show people that, they say, oh, that's the Placido Domingo model? No, these are Placido Domingo's tails. Thank you very much. People were reaching out from all over to help us. My wife is a flutist. She's been head of the National Flute Association. and been involved in that organization. So she knows flutists all over the world. And for some reason, Sir James Galway had my cell phone number on his phone. And our second or third day in Chicago, after alighting there and finding an apartment that somebody donated to us, I was standing on the streets of Chicago, the phone rang, and it was Sir James Galway. Jim, how you doing? Are you doing okay? And he wanted to know how we were getting along. And then he said the night before he had been at a concert and reception of the New York Philharmonic at the Lucerne Festival. And he said at the reception, he took Zarin Mehta aside and said, you need to do something to help these people. And that's where the idea was hatched of a side-by-side concert with the Louisiana Philharmonic and the New York Philharmonic as a fundraiser. It was broadcast nationally.
Zarin Mehta being the executive, at the time, the executive director of the New York Philharmonic.
Exactly. So that was just another example of the music community coming together and people in unexpected places reaching out and trying to help us. It was a wonderful, like one of a gazillion wonderful moments.
So you had the web keeping you together as an ensemble as people were scattered. As people started coming back to New Orleans after the storm, and two people central to this organization, you must have had to go and survey the damage at the Orpheum Theater. What did you see?
I was actually one of the first people back in the Orpheum Theater after they opened the city, after it had been evacuated. And so we went in the Orpheum to see if our instruments were salvageable or where they were. Unfortunately, all the percussion instruments had been moved to the basement, which flooded. The Orpheum Theater was wide open, doors flapping in the wind, literally. And the theater had been drained, but you could see the watermark on the first floor in the seating. We went downstairs with flashlights and sort of hazmat suits, and the basement was still shiny wet from having been drained, and it looked exactly like a scene from the Titanic or something. And all our instruments were a complete mess, and most of everything.
That's mostly percussion, double basses, things that aren't so portable.
That's right.
Harp.
Harps. I think Rachel lost a couple of harps.
Pianos.
I think the piano was upstairs. But speaking of pianos, one of the terrible things about driving around New Orleans for the first probably 2 months after the city had opened, this is when there were still National Guard trucks roaming the streets. Up and down the streets were refrigerators. Out in front of every single house was a refrigerator because everyone had evacuated, power had gone off, everything in the refrigerator had spoiled, and so everybody's refrigerator was out on the curb.
Because you can't get rid of the smell.
Right. And the other thing was pianos. Pianos in the areas that had flooded, because a piano, when it's flooded, it's just too expensive. Doesn't matter if it's a Steinway or what. If it's flooded, it's junk. And there were all these gorgeous grand pianos, and upright, every kind of piano you can imagine, out on the street, waiting to be picked up. It was a terrible sight, really.
We heard Jim Atwood and Patty Adams, husband and wife, principal musicians, and senior administrators of the Louisiana Philharmonic. They're speaking with City Lights executive producer Noel Morris. That music comes from Terrence Blanchard's piece, A Tale of God's Will, A Requiem for Katrina. The Louisiana Philharmonic is going home next month for the first time since the hurricane. The Vaudeville Theater turned concert hall will reopen its doors after a $15 million restoration. You can see pictures of the 1920s gem of a building on our website, wabe.org.